Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica, Mitch Albom, and Bob Ryan.
I'm Mike Lupica, MLB.com, NY Daily News.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
And I am Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN, and we heartily welcome you on this Monday to the edition of bi-weekly edition of the Sports Reporter. We are with you every Monday and Thursday. If I misuse the bi-weekly thing, you know, people do that all the time. I don't know. You know, we're here twice a week, not every other week. Okay. All right. Now, gentlemen, it's basketball. Gentlemen, basketball starting at 1:30 p.m. Eastern. 1:30 p.m. Eastern, they will toss the ball up and we will get the playoffs started finally. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm interested, and I won't know if excited is the word, but aroused, interested, curious. And there's a number of intriguing matchups in this first round.
The NBA playoffs begin today on the 17th of August. They begin 4 months after they normally would have begun. But they have been, you know what? This little restart has been tremendously exciting. It's obvious that nobody's going to play any defense, but people kind of like, you know, they like scoring. And, you know, just on the first day, they're building up to this. Utah-Denver, by the way, has a chance to be a terrific series. That's the first game. And then we cap off with Luka and Kristaps. Against, I think the team that because the Lakers have had their issues, people think the Clips are the favorite right now. If the favorite is not Toronto or Milwaukee, no, it's an interesting array of games. The four games being played today
in both conferences.
I think you said the thing that I think is the most intriguing, Mike, indirectly about the defense. I want to see if now that the whatever you want to call the end of that regular season, which play-ins or finish-ups or mop-up or clean-up or get-back-together time, whatever, it wasn't really basketball at its finest or at its most intense. And there were a lot of teams that came into the thing knowing, hey, what are we playing for? We don't care about home court advantage. It doesn't mean anything. So I'm not sure what the private conversations were within teams about how hard they were going to go during the eight-game finish to the season. But now we're at the playoffs, and defense is going to determine who wins a championship. It always does. And you're right, Mike, nobody has played it up till now. So you take what everybody I think is the most intriguing, at least star-studded matchup to begin with, which is the Lakers and Portland and Damian Lillard with his 40, 50, 60 points a night. And you wonder, okay, is that going to come to a screeching halt because somebody's going to actually finally play defense on him? Or can the Portland Trailblazers play any defense, even against an offensively challenged team like the Lakers? And that defensive question is going to go through a lot of the rounds here now. What we've watched is it's basketball, and it's good that basketball's back, but it's not playoff basketball. It wasn't close to playoff basketball. And now we're going to see what playoff basketball looks like in COVID-19.
It was ABA basketball, for those of you old enough to remember those days. It was Matador defense basketball. It was hey, my turn, your turn basketball,
which D'Antoni led to ball. It was
which
D'Antoni
led
ball.
Yeah, which led to a lot of fun games with and momentum and capped off on Saturday. I'm glad I invested myself to watch that game between Portland and Memphis. It was a fun athletic
Bob.
Event with momentum shifts and dazzling individual excellence from both big men on occasion and the little guys and then. You know, with a big effort, closing effort from McCollum, who's supposed to be hurt with a L3, you know, whatever you want to call it, fracture strain in his back. And I'm not saying supposed to be. He is hurt. He's playing. He comes through big time after Lillard had done it again. No, anyway, it was a nice way to end it. It was fun to watch.
Hey, by the way, we have to take 1 second and talk about a player whose season ended on Saturday, because he's going to be one of the best and most exciting players in this sport for the next 10 years, and that is Ja Morant. Even playing with an injured thumb, he is as exciting to watch as any player in this sport right now. His skill set is and once he starts really knocking down three-pointers, I don't know how you defend this kid. And yeah, they ended up with a wonderful game and a wonderful finish, and Here's the thing about the Blazers. Okay, let's just talk about, even though they're not playing one of the four games, because, you know, them against LeBron is going to be one of the main events of the opening, the first round, okay? They really, Bob and Mitch, they really don't cover anybody. they get no stops when they need to get a stop. They finally got one the other day, and it saved them from having to play another day against Ja Morant. But for all the storm clouds that are supposed to be hovering over the Lakers, I don't believe that the Portland Trailblazers are going to get enough stops against just LeBron and Anthony Davis to advance.
They actually got one more other one. Lillard made one game before to save that 134-133 game. He actually saved the game with a stop. To echo what you're saying about Morant, and it occurred to me watching him that the nature of what he does with the explosion, you know, the great first step explosion and the way he explodes.
An explosion to the basket, too.
We have seen this in the not-too-recent past, which brings us it's not a tragedy, but the sad reality of a career that will never be what it should have been. And that is Derrick Rose. This kid is the reincarnation in this nature of Derrick Rose. This is the Derrick Rose that got my attention. I always said that you had to see Derrick Rose in person to appreciate the difference between what he does and how he does it and what everybody else that I'd almost ever seen do it. His last second explosion to the hoop and his ability to change hands in midair, something that we saw and made him. I'm thinking about this watching Morant. Rose was an MVP before he got hurt.
Right.
And so that's all. This kid. We have seen this in the last 10 years, but this is great to see. I love watching him. And also, by the way, there was a big Twitter thing going on afterward about his 8 turnovers. You know, like, hey. Get over it. You tell me you watch that game and he didn't think he was an asset? Stop it.
All right, let's talk about the teams that are in this, and we've got all these pieces on the board. So let's, for sake of organization, let's begin in the West and break down these matchups
come on.
Here. Because there's so much to unpack here. And let's start with 1-8. Well, it is 1-8, Mike, and so it's not supposed to be a massive challenge when it's 1-8. And I think you're right. I think Portland will take a game. But I think it'll be a gun, and somebody will win 128 to 122. But I think more than likely that's going to be the Lakers. What you want to see, and I'm sure everybody is looking for, is, okay, LeBron James kicking in his team into this kind of gear. They weren't great in the bubble. I think they were 3-5. They had long bouts of offensive inconsistency. But a guy like LeBron James, we know at this point, he before he ever got to the bubble, he already had a plan. He already had in his mind what they needed to do and what they didn't. And either they've been sort of playing possum a little bit, getting themselves their legs into shape, and now he's going to spend, you know, the days that they've just had leading up to this saying, okay, follow me, and I'll show you how playoff basketball is played. Or they really are missing Avery Bradley and Rajon Rondo and just a full offensive contributors besides himself and Anthony Davis, and they're going to be searching for offense. That's what everybody wants to see. They want to see, are they going to turn it on the way that they did when we had a regular basketball season and they just seem to be chugging along. If they do, I don't think they're going to have any trouble with Portland at all,
despite the fact that Lillard
put up some games.
Mitch, you know the other thing? The Lakers will play defense, okay? They have a great stopper in Anthony Davis, and I may be dead wrong about this. I don't think the Lakers are going to play games in the 130s. I actually don't. I think they're one team because of LeBron's defensive character and skill set, but tell me you're not excited to see what if the Mavs really show up against the Clips tonight. Porzingis, I'm calling him a kid. He's 25 now. Doncic and Porzingis are going to be a force of nature in this sport, in that conference for a long time. And they kind of fell into, this 2-7 game. But I think it might be fun tonight.
Well, the yeah, but with Porzingis now is he doesn't defend much. Okay, Mike, he's offensively he's scary, 7'3", can shoot threes and is dexterous and clever and everything, got a handle the whole bit. But so he's vulnerable defensively. We'll see. But they're fun to watch. We all want to see, like watching them play. Doncic is he's a triple double every night at possibility. What is he, 21? Yeah. Oh, by the way, Mitch, one more thing. I think they may have found the guy during one of the things I think that was a good development for the Lakers, whether they won three games and lost five or whatever, is Kuzma. They got Kuzma back to, and that could be that guy you're talking about.
We've been talking about him for a long time with the Lakers and saying that, you know, he has to be that third guy.
Yeah.
You still can't win with two players. You still have to have. It can't be that big a drop off between your star two. I mean, there have been many cases that look at Oklahoma City over the years and others where there have been star two players.
Even
but
Kevin Love,
else.
Mitch. Even Kevin Love, the year the Cavs won. I mean, obviously he wasn't what he'd been in his high scoring years, but he was a very important wingman to Kyrie right. and LeBron.
And you have to have that third guy. And Kuzma, you're right, Bob. He's probably the MVP of the Lakers, and he's in the bubble, and he's played well, and he's stepped up. He won a game with a game winner, and he's getting confidence. And I'm sure that LeBron, and the way that he'll be coaching this team, and you know he'll be coaching this team, he's going to make sure that Kuzma gets his chances and builds his confidence up because they know how much they need him. I want to say something about the Clippers in a second, but first, our word from our good friends at Geico. Hey, friends, did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of the money Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? You want your dog to make you breakfast in bed with Belgian waffles and a fresh fruit compote? As nice as that sounds, that's probably never going to happen. But at least there's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more. The 2-7 in the West, as you pointed out, Mike, the Clippers against the Mavericks, and it's going to be very interesting, although I think the Mavericks, remember, for Doncic and Porzingis, this is their first playoff game. You know, one's 21 and one's 25. They've never played in a playoff game before. I think going against the experience and the defense that they will face, because the Clippers will play defense too, is not going to make this a long series. But we do have to look at the Clippers. You know, they have not really had a chance to play together with everybody and all their pieces.
And no incentive to play hard, Mitch, you know, since they've been back. You know, they were pretty
right.
locked
you're the number two
spot.
Seed. Yeah. You're not catching the number one, and yeah. that's all they had to do.
Right.
Home court doesn't matter. But Harrell hasn't played yet. I don't even know. Is he going to play?
Yeah,
I
Doc mean, said quote, I'm throwing him in there.
All right,
that.
But that's exactly what he's doing. He's throwing him in their first game in 8 months or however long it's been since they've
been, a while.
Been playing. Yeah, 6 months, 5 months. So you got to get him back on track.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've had injuries. They've had quarantine issues. They've had guys who have taken off for the wrong reasons. And, you know, and
you don't
ironically.
Think chicken wings are good. Wow. Boy, I'll tell you.
Chicken wings at a strip club. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are the two most consistent parts of their team. They've been playing well together. They got good chemistry together. But again, I say the same thing for them as I do about the Lakers. There's got to be a third and a fourth player to get you there.
Well, Morris, maybe. In theory, the pieces are there. They just.
Do you think, Bob? Do you think they're a better? Everyone keeps talking about who is really the favorite going into them or the Lakers. What's your take on Clippers Lakers?
That the loss of those two guards, you know, has dominated our consciousness about what they're, you know, what they can accomplish. The Lakers, you know, speaking of Bradley and Rondo.
Rondo.
LeBron.
Rondo's making his way back into the bubble, by the way.
All right. And LeBron.
Yeah, but
I think
that
LeBron.
Wasn't the reason he was out. He's got a wrist thing, right?
He's paced himself well. I still like the Lakers. And until you dethrone him in the West, I'm going with him. Because, you know, I'm proprietary. I love Doc Rivers. I'm rooting for them. But those two guys, Leonard is proven. I mean, we know that. You know you're going to get something from Leonard. You know that. You know Leonard's going to be good. Guy had a big game the other day. Zubac, all of a sudden, you know,
he played well.
All right.
It's been a big weekend for middle European big men. It was a very big weekend.
Because they're playing the second game today, we all continue to be fascinated by the Toronto Raptors, Kawhi's old team.
Yep.
And there even is a chance. It's not a crazy chance, by the way, that Kawhi's new team may end up playing his old team in the NBA Finals, which would be a great drama. But the Raptors, they play a beautiful game of basketball. They play an unselfish game of basketball. They are coached by, even though he's a title winner, Nick Nurse, who's one of the most underrated guy in the whole business. And I mean, the Brooklyn Nets are kind of mysterious because we came into this thinking they were only going to have like three healthy players, and then they played their asses off. But the Raptors, to me, are a team to watch in this tournament because, guys, they have been solid from the first game of the season to the last so far. And Bob's right. They probably are playing with the biggest chip on their shoulder in this tournament because they're going to show everybody that they were more than just Kawhi.
They've been doing it all year, Mike. They've been playing from day one.
Day one?
The day they assembled, wherever their training camp was, they've been truly one of those teams on a mission. They are. I've been on their bandwagon for a few, several months now. Yes, they're going. It wouldn't remotely surprise me if they were able to beat the Bucks, and it will be the Bucks that they'll have
well,
to beat.
Well, they play defense. Yeah. And, as I've been saying, a team that's going to play defense is going to win some games, and they're going to win some games. And correct me if I'm wrong, didn't they win more than the Lakers this year?
Mm-hmm. Who?
Toronto? The Lakers are 52.
No.
Yeah, 53. They won more games than the Lakers.
Well, they ended up passing him in
53-19. 53-19.
When the season resumed. Yep.
Losing Kawhi Leonard and you're 53-19. And the only challenge to them is different than all the rest of the teams. Their challenge is offense, finding that big shot when they absolutely need it. But their defense, they actually, I'm reading that they're down. They average 101.8 points. That's like a miracle in today's game. Yeah. It's almost under triple figures. I expect big things out of Toronto. I expect them absolutely to be in the conference finals, and then of course, that's where we're the big question is the Milwaukee Bucks, and can Giannis take that next step? Players of his talent usually do. There's that moment where they just rise. Do we feel that this is going to be that year?
I will be interested to see how he is defended going forward. If his plan in big moments is only to take it to the basket, teams will find out, will find a way to push him outside, and then it's going to be a question of whether he can knock down shots. I want to ask you guys a question now that the tournament is starting. And I think it's going to affect some teams more than others, but we are finally going to have some kind of referendum on what no fans is going to mean in the sport. I mean, if the Mavericks were going into LA tonight, I think it would be a vastly different experience than they're going to get inside the bubble. And you know, the team we were just talking about, does anybody have a more passionate fan base than the Toronto Raptors? And so who's going to lose the most by not playing in front of their own fans in this tournament?
Well, you may have hit it there in terms of conceivably, but then again, that may be offset by what we were talking about earlier, which is their motivation, which is a supreme one. Great question. It's one interesting. The one thing you do get is the home. You get your own noise. Your own people make their own sounds. For the background, the artificial stuff. You get the play. Yeah. We have a very good story in the Globe today about that and about how it all works. And they have really done, whoever gets credit, I don't know, whoever in that front office of the NBA gets credit for the way that they've, who the supervisor, the major domo who have
the
organized
Zoom fans? That's one of the coolest ideas
everything.
Ever.
Mike, whoever's planned everything or whoever is the committee that planned everything, boy, you got to give them credit. They
Mitch,
tried
do you like
hard.
The Zoom fans?
Yes. Yes, it's fun. I laugh at you see some great ones.
Yes, I like laugh. It. Yes, and all that, but I don't like it. No.
Right. Well,
you asked me, do I like it? I don't like it at all. Yeah. And do I think it makes a difference? I think to young teams, maybe. You look at the teams that have always had, you know, Portland has always had a massive crowd advantage when you play up there. It's a tough place to play. Yep. Toronto has played like that with their crowd. The LA teams, not so much. And I think when you get guys who like LeBron and now Davis and Kawhi who have played on multiple teams and multiple arenas, I really don't think the noise affects them a whole lot. But what's going to be interesting as you bring that up, Mike, is, you know, you traditionally go into these series thinking, okay, game one, game two, they got to win. Got to win game one, game two, because they're at home.
Right.
And, you know, can't fall behind. If you, and then you're going on the road. It doesn't mean a thing. And we're going to watch a whole different layout of these things. Someone can win the first two, and then someone come back and win three. It's not going to mean anything. There's no travel. There's no difference in where you stay. I think that has more to do with road than anything else. You know, the same people that you're seeing are the same people that you're seeing. And you're not going to a different hotel room. You're not getting on an airplane. There's nothing different whatsoever. Or you're going to the gym. You're just going to the gym and you're playing basketball. And so these series are going to, mark my words, we'll be talking about this in a couple of weeks about, isn't it weird how when a team's up 3-1, you know, usually when a team's up 2-0, all that goes out the window.
And Mike, you'll appreciate this. I just happened to stumble upon, I was looking, researching something, and in the 1976 finals of the Celtics and the Suns, just a reminder that the triple overtime game, which started at 9 p.m. Eastern time, ended at 12:08 Saturday morning, was followed by a Sunday noon game at 39 hours later in Phoenix. And what I'm getting at is this: the quotes from the people afterward that not only were the players in Phoenix emotionally and physically exhausted and unable to regain what they had gotten and done in Boston, the fans were flat. The fans who watched the game on TV in the Valley of the Sun did not bring it. They couldn't bring it. Dynamics of travel, you know, are right. Eliminated.
Out the window.
You can't even, Bob and I were there, and we're not going to spend more than 30 seconds on this. We were in Boston Garden that Friday night, and the atmosphere there was as close to a pro wrestling crowd as I've ever seen.
You
mean people don't jump and
that was,
beat up
and
on
by
referees
the way,
at mid-court?
Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah. Yes. And
the Garhurt, I was there too.
And Mitch,
I was there too as a student in Brandeis.
Oh,
that
really?
That was the night.
And
you didn't
yes,
say
I
hi.
In the building.
You didn't say hi to the esteemed colleague, Globe Runner.
You were professionals. I didn't belong with you.
It was the night that our dear friend Paul Westfall, who is battling brain cancer right now, actually made his first coaching maneuver by realizing that with the rules at the time, if the Celtics called a timeout they did not have. If the Suns called a timeout they did not have with 1 second left, they would only give up one free throw. They'd be down by 2 points, but they could take the ball out at half court. And Paul threw it to Garhurt, and on they went. And it was really one of the most fun series I've ever witnessed in my whole life.
Okay. A little aside on that. We of course, as college students, could only afford the nosebleed seats way, way, way upstairs. But you recall there was a point in that game when everybody thought it was over.
They
headed for the exits.
Yeah.
And we headed for the exits too. And as we were going down, we heard all this noise and we raced back in and we got to come back in on the floor. Because at that point, all the guards were watching the game too. All the security guards were. Nobody was paying attention.
Mitch, were you there? Were you down there when the fan went after referee Richie Powers, which was just part of the craziness of the night when they thought the game was over?
It was all nuts. We were you know, standing up and jumping, trying to be seen over the back, but nobody stopped us from coming in on the ground level. And so we watched the last minutes of that game from the best vantage point in the house after having sat the whole game in the worst. So it was
but I'm going to, because it's an opportunity. An old friend emailed me the other day, and he was watching a video. He's seen the YouTube, I guess, of this game, and he was saying, where was all the security? I said, Daryl, the security as we know it today did not exist then. People would storm. They were ready. They came around the court. They stormed. They were ready to go. As soon as the game was over, they were storming that court, and there were thousands,
Mitch,
people.
And Mitch, let me just say that we won't have that atmosphere.
No. We don't have that atmosphere.
You know for a fact, I'm so glad you were there because it's one of the great nights, crazy nights in NBA.
Best Tommy Heinsohn fainting in
the
locker
room. All right, but before we go, we're not quite done with the NBA, but before we move on, I want to remind you that we are happily sponsored by Cuts Clothing, which I wish I looked as good in those shirts as my sons do. We all have a drawer full of t-shirts. I'm not sure anybody has more t-shirts than I do. It's a menswear staple, which is weird for something that has so many problems. Does yours get that bacon neck thing after a while, or does it lose its shape and give you that parachute fit? Well, you're not alone. Back in 2016, Stephen Borelli couldn't find a good t-shirt anywhere. So you know what he did? He made his own. He founded Cuts Clothing to make t-shirts with an athletic, tailored look that are high quality enough for work, a night out, or anything in between. Okay, here's the deal. I spend a stupid amount of time in my life wearing t-shirts. I'm telling you, Cuts are the best. The neck never starts to droop. They never lose their shape. And my shape isn't as good as my son's shapes, so I have gotten them for them, and they look fabulous, and they last forever. Here's the test of a good t-shirt. Does it continue to look new? Cuts look new forever. They're pre-shrunk, wrinkle-free, keep their shape, and their custom-engineered Pika Pro Fabric is amazingly soft. I'm telling you, once you wear a Cuts shirt, it's impossible to choose a regular t-shirt ever again. That's why Cuts is the only shirt worth wearing. Loved by your favorite athletes, entrepreneurs, and even podcast hosts and their sons. It seems like everyone is wearing Cuts these days. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/reporters. That's cutsclothing.com/reporters for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing or that you're ever going to need ever again. Okay, when you look at this first round of the playoffs, which has so many interesting matchups. Guys, here's one thing we didn't think we were going to see in the opening round when the season started, whenever the hell it started originally, okay? Celtics Sixers in the first round.
Yeah, right, as a 3-6. Absolutely. Well, the big dynamic, the big issue, Ben Simmons is out. Okay, Ben Simmons is out. They still have weapons, and the guy who has tormented the Celtics, they have not had the answer, and they're going to have to figure it out, and that is Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid has trashed them. They are not good in general terms against...
Is he completely healthy, Bobby? I mean, is he
we don't know.
Good? Okay.
I don't know, but he's average. You know, he hurts them. He hurts a lot of people, but that's going to be a big issue there. But the Celtics are coming in with Kemba Walker apparently ready to go. They've really nursed him back, monitored minutes. He's supposed to be good. They've got as good a 1-4 scoring possibility as anybody. They have 3 20-point scorers. How about that? Yeah. One of the few times in league history they've got 3 20-point scorers, namely Tatum, Brown, and Walker, and also Gordon Hayward playing now very well. Maybe not as well as he did the year before we got the big contract,
but
the best
well.
He's played, yeah, the best he's well. Played, and he yeah. gives them a dynamic. Anyway, so their depth is a suspect for sure. There's no question, but it is an intriguing one. Of course, there's history there, but once again, Mike, the history thing is always much more accentuated when you've got the crowd.
And Mitch, how about that Pistons-Knicks series? I mean, I'm telling you, you remember what it was like in the old days when Bernard against the
best five game series I ever saw.
Right now, the only place they're meeting is a golf course. But there are a few interesting matchups that aren't going to produce anybody who's going to challenge for the championship. But they're still interesting. Like Al Horford playing against the Celtics now for Philadelphia is good. And on the other side, how about Houston and Oklahoma City?
Oh, boy.
I mean, these are guys who they've all played for one another, it seems, at one
Already
point or
Westbrook.
Another. Yeah, Westbrook isn't playing. It's a shame because that would be maybe he'll get back in there. But now you got Chris Paul, who obviously feels that Houston dumped him, and he's been playing great.
Boy, has he been playing great, Mitch. I mean, he's we thought he might pack it in
and healthy.
He's only going to stop there on his way to another team. He's played his ass off.
and healthy, you know, and that's always been the knock against him. So he's been playing great, and that'll be interesting. And obviously Harden, you know, and the history at Oklahoma City. So that again, I don't think an NBA champion is coming out of that, but it'll these will be fun series to watch. But a last coda on that whole thing about, you know, not switching back and forth. I think the result is going to be, you want to jump out to an early lead in these series. You know, frequently in the NBA, the home team wins game one or game two. The mentality is steal one on the road, you know, and worse, if you go down 0-2, you go, well, they just held serve, and now we're going back to our place. That's not the case. You go up 2-0, you're up 2-0. You know, and the next game is in the same place where it was, and you're games closer to the four than you need. So you don't want to fall behind in these series. And that whole thing about, well, we'll have that mental shift. We'll all go back home, and you know, we didn't expect to win the first two here, and we would have been happy just splitting with them. All that's out the window. It's like win the first game, and then win the second game, and you're that much closer to winning the third and the fourth game. There will be no dip and rebound because you're now going to game three in your place. And I think that's going to be a mental change for the player.
Is anybody paying attention to the Stanley Cup to see if there's any lessons we can draw in this regard so far? Anything we draw out of the idea of the Isles and the Caps, for example, 3-0? I don't know. I'm just asking. I'm watching the Bruins. I've monitored all three games. I'm planning on, we got a little overlap with the Celtics tonight, but I'll deal with it. But, you know, and they've gone back 1-1, you know, they've gone alternating. So I don't know there. But
Barry,
I don't know.
Trotz is happy right now, I'll tell you that. Barry Trotz, who used to coach the Caps and now coaches the Islanders, he's very happy. And all I can say is if the Islanders really do get on a run and make it to the Stanley Cup Finals, it will be very interesting for those of us who live in the greater metropolitan New York area. We'll say what Bill Russell once said about the baseball player Joe Morgan. Isn't it funny how good teams follow Lou Lamoriello around after everything he did with the Devils, and now he's running the Islanders?
Yeah, that's true.
Hockey is so hard to pull any conclusions like you're trying to draw, Bob, because you look across the board and it's always a one-game overtime. You know, 2-1. Here are the scores from last night: 2-1, 5-4, 1-0, and 3-1. You know what? And 3-2, and three of those games are in overtime. So, it's really hard. Hockey's a hard one to draw from because those games are invariably just close wherever they are. But I don't, and also in the first round series, it's kind of hard to tell. But mark my words, you're going to see 4-0 results. You're going to see teams just sweeping because the teams are going to realize, hey, there's nothing different between game two and game three that we can rely on, and we don't have the answer for these guys, and boom, you're knocked out. Remember also that after this round in the NBA, they get to bring family members in. And that'll be very interesting to see how that bubble dynamic changes, because then you get to bring in your loved ones, your kids, your significant other. If you've been dating, you can prove you've been dating for a while.
Right. You can just
find her on the internet. Yeah.
Mitch and Bob, I just want to ask one more question before we move to college football. Yeah. Okay. Do you think anything comparable to Tuukka Rask, the Bruins goalie, opting out during the playoffs, if anything comparable to that might happen in the bubble down in Orlando?
Well, who knows? I'm glad you brought that up, because I think we would have been remiss if we did not address the most unusual sports story
fascinating story? Oh, my
goodness. After game, on the morning of, hours, 2 to 3 hours prior to dropping the puck, is when the announcement came down that Tuukka Rask was pulling out, going back home to Finland. There's so much to talk about there in terms of the reaction of the teammates, the future of him, but the idea of it, I don't know. This is something we're in uncharted waters in so many ways in every walk of our lives, but this is really something that I don't know anyone was prepared to deal with. A player of great stature, you know, not just some, you know, this is the starting goalie who is one of the premier goalies in the league on the morning of a game. is deciding that he's got to go. You know, and Don Sweeney, the general manager, protected him in the press conference. Well, there's stuff we know about, and we're fully supporting him. I don't know what the implication is going on back in Finland. He's got three young kids, including a four-month-old, and you know what's happening. We don't know, and I think we have we should give him the benefit of the doubt that there's some serious reason why he's doing this in the circumstance. Now, remember this, guys, and you both, I'm sure, know this. That this comes on the heels of a bizarre press conference in post game two after they lost, and he basically went off and said that this doesn't feel like playoffs. There's no buzz. Basically said I can't get excited. And he said I'm not worried about results. How do you think that went over?
Yeah, I mean, there's more to that story than COVID-19. But it is an interesting question to ask. Mike, my response would be at this point with the NBA, just a feel thing with the NBA. The guys who were there are there. The guys who didn't want to be there are already not there. I don't think anybody's changing their mind at this point. Why would you go through that meaningless play-in thing and then opt out of it?
But if you don't think the world has changed in the world of sports. The starting goaltender on a playoff team said, "I'm out of here," a few hours before a game.
Mike Conley has just bailed because of a impending birth of a child on the Jazz. They will not have Mike Conley.
But he'll come back.
Yeah, he's coming back. Oh, yeah.
Right. He'll have to sit through the whole thing.
And Hayward, there's a September birth due in the Hayward household. We'll see how that goes with the Celtics.
But I do have to say, and then we're going to go on to college football. The NBA has pulled this off much better than I thought they would. We talked about this a month and a half ago, whether it would ever make it, whether the thing would close down before they got running. And for the most part, they have adhered to the rules. You haven't heard about a lot of players. There's been the odd one here or there, but you haven't heard about a lot of players violating it. And everybody has been healthy, and they've been playing the game of basketball, albeit without defense. Okay, but they're still close to each other. And apparently, they've been able to do it without spreading the disease. So hats off to them. And more importantly, what this teaches other people about how we can survive this thing. Because there's no guarantee that a year from now, we're not still doing the same thing. That next year's NBA season isn't played in a bubble, too. You know, everyone keeps counting on this vaccine. But if it doesn't come, you've got to find ways to get things done. And apparently this system, and the NHL is doing its own version of it too, but better obviously than baseball or some of the other ones that are going on, it seems to work. And we need to acknowledge that because we spent a lot of time talking about how it'll never work. So, all right, let's be cautiously
optimistic. Have the significant and potentially insignificant others been allowed back inside the bubble?
Not yet. It comes in the second round. That's your prize for winning the first round.
Mitch,
that may change everything.
Mitch, I want you to be the editor of this podcast, not on the significant others. I want you to be vigilant about the potential for insignificant others to get inside the bubble.
Insignificant other.
You put a song now running through my head. You used a buzzword. You used the word close, and now the Carpenters are running in.
No. But okay, Mitch, make them start.
I'm not going to sing,
Mitch.
Here's a shift that'll get that out of your brain. College football. There's nothing Carpenters about college football. Unless you want to sing We've Only Just Begun, and that will be the SEC and the Big 12. And what's the third conference? The ACC, of course, the Pac-10 and the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, neither of which have exactly 10 teams in them, are now out. And it looks like, for the moment, we're going to have a half full college football season.
But isn't the American Athletic Conference going to play too? The UCF, isn't that, aren't they?
I think there are. I mean, I'm talking Power 5 here now. There are a handful of conferences elsewhere that are still going.
I
can't keep track of all of them. A number of them have canceled and a number of them aren't.
Mitch, are you saying those are the insignificant other conferences?
Insignificant
is that what you're suggesting here?
Yeah. Well, the also-rans. Although in this environment, now that you've gotten rid of Ohio State and Michigan and Wisconsin and Penn State and Oregon and other ones, who knows? A team that goes undefeated there may be very highly ranked. I have no idea how you're going to run a championship through this. And I don't think anybody is really thinking that through right now. I think they just want to get to play so that they can have the games, so that they can have the revenue, so they can continue the traditions. Somebody pointed out in one of the articles today that if you look at who's playing and who isn't in college football, it lines up like a political map. And it's blue state, red state type of thing. And you know, with some exceptions because of the Midwest, that's largely true. But obviously a lot of teams in the South, a lot of teams with states that kind of have taken the more Trumpian view of this virus than necessarily the Californian view of it. And it shouldn't surprise anybody because politics enter into academics as much as they do the rest of life. But do you think that these conferences are going to be able to pull this off 2 months from now? Are we still going to be talking about these games being played?
Mitch, I don't. And I will tell you, and it's why college football is different from the NFL. You are talking about college guys. Okay, you're talking about college guys. We've talked about this a lot. They are college guys who have been cooped up largely, like the rest of America, for 4 or 5 or more months. And the idea that they are going to go back to college and they're going to be as vigilant as the bubble teams are in the NHL and as baseball has tried mightily to be, they're college guys. They're going to party. I'm telling you, there's going to be clusters and you're going to see it 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks into the season. College ain't the bubble and it's never going to be the bubble. And so many of these guys who know all the rules and all of the protocols, they think they're 19 and 20 and 21 and invincible.
Plus they're going to travel. They're going to travel. That alone makes it dicey.
Look
you know?
At those traveling parties. How big are they in college football? They're huge.
100,
they're huge.
120.
They're going to travel. Oh, no, it's. I agree with you, Mike. And it's that we're having this discussion at all speaks to the red state, blue state thing of culture and of mentality. And everything's political now. And it is fascinating that that's the way it's broken down, but it has. And I don't know then how comfortably or how gently it's going to expire. You know, who's going to, where we're going to, now we got this thing with this petition thing with Justin Fields. I know what I'm saying.
So a kid put up a petition. Okay. All right, okay. I'm more interested in, I was reading the University of Florida. You know, smack dab in the middle of SEC, is going to welcome back 50,000 students when they come back here. Now, I just look at that number, and then I think 50 is the actual number in most states where that's the biggest gathering that you can have is 50. And you're going to have 50,000 students coming onto campus there, and you're going to expect them all to social distance and wear masks and all the rest of it. And these players are not... They don't live in the training facility. They live in dormitories. They have to go to some classes, presumably, although I'm sure guys like Nick Saban are going to try to get all the players to do virtual classes and do things online. But can a guy like Saban or Dabo Swinney or some of these other guys really control every player on the team, where they go, who they come in contact with every minute? You've seen the quotes. They're better off with us than they are at home. That's basically, to me, it's a veiled insult that their families can't take care of them the way that good old Papa college coach can take care of them and watch out for them and make sure they're not getting in any kind of contact situation. But when they're at home, they don't have girlfriends. They don't have their buddies. They don't have frats. They don't have classes. They don't have any of that stuff. So how you can say they're safer on a campus environment is a little weird to me. But what do you guys think about these coaches who are basically saying, let us take care of them. We can better control them and keep them away from COVID than if they were on their own.
Mitch, let you reference one thing, okay? And my fabulous daughter in 10 days is going back to college and being on campus. She is carrying 5 courses this semester. Do you know how many of them are in-person classes, Mr. Album?
One.
So start there.
So why is she even going back?
Because it's her senior year and she wants as much as possible of a normal senior year experience. And you know what? I embrace it. I do it with trepidation, but she has a right to go back to be with her friends. And by the way, to get the senior experience that last year's seniors did not get, if they're lucky. And those kids got sent home in March and they didn't get to take the walk. And again, I'm not expressing anything that would remotely get people to think I'm talking about this like a tragedy. Okay. Or one of the, however, 170,000 people have died. All I'm saying is, you're a college kid and you put in the 3.5 years. And the one thing you're looking forward to, you know it, Bob knows it, I know it, is second semester senior year. Okay. And those kids got it for about a month and no graduation, no walk, no senior week, no nothing.
Right. But that second semester senior year, which we all went through, it was characterized by the social part of it. That was the best part. That you get to be with your friends, you get to relax, the pressure's off, and nobody's going to go to these universities for the purpose of staying in their room because they could do that at home.
No, that's the whole, Mitch. It's the whole thing, and as a parent, you're paying what you're paying for college for them to go back and get back together. If as a parent, you just hold your breath. And keep your fingers crossed and hope it's going to be okay.
So my question is this. The one class that your daughter goes to in person, someone tests positive from that class and they're aware of it. Aren't they obliged, these universities, to basically contact trace with that and say, okay, anybody who was in English 404, there was a kid in that classroom,
I'm
presuming was inside. So now you all have to quarantine for 14 days. Well, you can see how quickly, okay, anyone who was in that class who then that night might have gone to a party or then that might have visited their boyfriend or anything like that, then they have to quarantine too. And you see how quickly it can get to athletes on any of the sports teams that are playing, unless Nick Saban has them all living in a big giant tent and having tutors come, you know, in hazmat suits. I don't see how you avoid that touching your football team.
Mitch and Bob, here's the deal, okay? And I think everybody's going to have the best intentions. But as we found out with the Cleveland Indians, all it takes is two knuckleheads, okay? Right. All it takes is two knuckleheads. And it's not just a baseball team there. It's a college group, okay? It's a class. It's a whole bunch of kids. It's so unwieldy. I don't see, and that to bring it back to college football, and by the way, we'll talk about baseball on Thursday. To bring it back, I just don't see how it works for these college football teams just because of the sheer, Mitch, the sheer size of them. This year, it's exponentially complicated to think they're all going to skate through.
Guys, before we conclude, we remind everybody that we are pleased to say we're brought to you by our friends at GEICO. Did you know that right now GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of the money GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your dog to make your breakfast in bed? With Belgian waffles and a fresh fruit compote? As nice as that sounds, that's probably never going to happen. But at least there's never been a better time to switch to GEICO. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more.
Well, what'll be interesting is I read a piece, I think it was on SI.com, where they were talking about why do some conferences decide to close down and other ones don't? Do they have different information? Are they working with different people? And the conclusion of this piece was they all kind of have the same information. It's how risk averse the particular places are and how risk averse the particular medical doctors are. Now, in the Pac-12, for example, their medical team is made up of a dozen or so doctors, very few of whom, if any, have anything to do with the athletic programs. They're independent. They're total outsiders. And not surprisingly, they came to the conclusion that there's just no way that you can pull off having fall sports, and the Pac-12 bailed out on it. Down in the SEC, they're not necessarily using outside doctors. These are people who have some ties to the universities. And their conclusions, as well as their risk, is viewed differently. And one of the SEC people, one of the infectious disease specialists there said, we're not looking at are we going to be able to pull this off in November or even October? We're just looking at, can we get started on September 20, whatever? And remember, the SEC pushed their whole thing back, so they're not starting until late September. And what they're really doing is kicking the can down the road. They're saying, well, so far for this week, we've pulled it off. Let's see if we can pull it off for next week. Let's see if we can pull it off for next week. And they're kind of approaching it that way, which I guess if you're going to try it, that's about the only way you can. That's why I said what I did at the beginning of this segment. There's no way you can even contemplate a championship or how that's going to happen. We're so far from that. They got to see if they can get through 1 week. Anyhow, all that we can discuss more on Thursday. And, of course, baseball season will have NBA results as well. You've been listening to the Sports Reporters Podcast. You can do so every Monday and Thursday on any of your popular podcast platforms, Stitcher, Spotify, Apple, Pandora, and the rest. If you like what you heard, leave us a comment or a rating. We always appreciate those. And on the lip of the NBA playoffs, until we see you again, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom wishing you a good week.